Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Brown Baby Podcast. I am your host, Nikesh Shukla. This is Season 1, Episode 7. How have there been 7 episodes already? I can't believe it. This is a podcast about how we raise our kids with joy and wonder in uncertain and, let's face it, increasingly bleak times. This is a question I explore every week. I'm a dad of 2 and I've just written a memoir called Brown Baby, which is kind of about all this stuff, about how the world is racist and sexist and horrible and filled with climate catastrophe, and I want my kids to be prepared for the realism of how fucked the world is, but I also want them to be joyful and boundless and ambitious and filled with love. So I did that in the memoir, but I just felt like there was so much more to say. There was so many more people to talk to. So each week I invite fellow parents of babies, fellow parents of brown babies, writers, musicians, chefs, comedians, actors and more to talk about their parenting journeys and the highs and lows they've experienced along the way. This for me is like a funny, frank and poignant look at parenting, and hopefully it will spark honest, self-effacing conversations about how we tell our kids about the world. We'll be talking about parenting fails and other things, and this is hopefully the comforting, uplifting podcast for anyone who's ever found themselves searching for answers in a sleep-deprived Google hole. It's not going to help you. I'm not going to do the hard sell on my memoir this week. I'd love it if you bought it from wherever you buy books. There's a link tree in the show notes, and there you can find links to the book online if you want to avoid Amazon. If you want to use Amazon, go for it. But as I said, I'm not going to do the hard sell. This week's hard sell comes from 2 people who I respect and love. Nadia Hussein said, "So honest, I found myself engulfed, consumed. I could feel myself in the room with Nikesh." Thank you, Nadia. And Nish Kumar said, "Part station of the..." I can't talk today. What is wrong with me? "Part State of the Nation tracked, part love letter to his family. The personal and political are fused in this masterpiece." And Kieran Millwood Hargrave said, "A hymn to difference, to the complexities inherent with being brown and British, funny and insightful, beautiful. Thank you to all of you. I love you all so much." So this week I talked to the incredible actor, podcaster, writer, Kelechi Okafor. What a wonderful, joyous chat we had. We talk about finding creative sparks in dark times, speaking up, her work as a writer, being present with our kids and so much more. Kelechi Okafor is an actor, a writer and founder of the Kalechnikov Fitness Studio. She is the host of the Say Your Mind podcast and the mind behind the hilarious Sally from HR series on social media. She is a brilliant, hilarious, unflinching presence online at Kalechnikov on most social media platforms. She's basically one of the few voices I go on social media to follow. Her clarity of worldview and her ability to speak about complex issues and informative, engaging and open ways make her one of the voices that we must listen to. Most excitingly, some of her fiction, a short story, appears in the new anthology Who's Loving You, a stunning new collection of short stories about love written by women of colour, edited by the incomparable Sarita Domingo. The book is out this month and features writers like Baridzo, Rowan Hiseo Buchanan, Sarah Collins, Danielle Dash, Sarita herself, Sarah Jafari, Dorothy Kumson, Kelechi and Kachenga. and Amna Salim and some more people. Get it now. It's in bookshops from the publisher Trapeze. Okay, before we get to the podcast, a little tale. My daughter has been learning writing at school. Important school stuff, important life skill, most hated skill. She finds it so boring and so tiring. She's really happy to read, to do math sums, to draw, but writing for something, some reason, just really winds her up. She starts off brilliantly, but as she gets further down the page, her lettering gets bigger and more erratic. And when I try and get her to practice this, she really gets annoyed with me. So today, I thought, let's try and make writing less the thing that she does at school and more a thing that can be used for fun. So we started talking about what she likes reading. And she likes reading books about unicorns and magic and adventure. And we started talking about a series of books that she really loves. It's a series of books that feature ponies that are fairies. No shade to the series, it's not my favourite. My daughters fucking love them. And so I was telling her that if we wanted, we could write our own story from that series, because the series has ended, there are no more books, we've read them all, and they're kind of sad to not be in that world anymore, so why don't we fill that world with more stories that we've come up with? So if she loves them, why don't we write one of our own? And we could draw our maps, and we could invent new characters, and we could bring our favourites from across the five or so books into one story. And it blew her fucking mind. She took to the writing with something approaching enthusiasm. We discussed story, and she was off. She was busy writing, and it became fun. I remember this feeling from my own school when we had to be handwriting robots, and I hated it. So this felt like a brilliant way of introducing writing to her in a way that made it fun. We're picking it up tomorrow. And when I reflect on it, this is how I wrote stories. I wrote my Spider-Man ones till I had my own characters with their own stories. And I will not let her, in her second year of school, get bored. Not when she's not even halfway through her school life. Now for the podcast interview, Kelechi.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's go. Welcome to the podcast, Kelechi. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So we are doing this podcast during the danger middle of the day nap. How are you feeling? Are you feeling stressed about it? Are you feeling like everything could go wrong in any second? Or are you feeling like, yeah, it's cool.
We're good. I'm feeling pretty accomplished, because I've gone to the studio this morning to do my stretches, do a bit of pole dance, answer a couple of emails. Then I've driven back home. And so in that time, my son's been napping. So I've come back to do this, and then I'll have a therapy session after this, and then straight into his next nap. So it's a good chunk of time. It's a good window where he's got enough energy to do other things, and then I've got almost enough energy to do other things.
One of the things that I really love about, if I can refer to it as a portfolio career of yours, is that you do so many vastly different things, and you do them all exceptionally well. You act, you podcast, you write, you're a personal trainer, you also run your own studio, you're a business person, like you do so many different things, and you are parenting as well. Do you find that you kind of have to compartmentalize your day and everything, you try and keep everything to a routine, or have you just kind of grown accustomed to being reactive and just letting things be what they will? Also, please add on if I've left anything out.
No, I think that's it. That those are all of the things currently. I try to compartmentalize because I'm the kind of person, like, I want things done at this time and I need to, because I know what my energy levels are like. So for instance, first thing in the morning, I like to go for a run, for instance. But if I get up and then my partner is just kind of like, so then I have to make the breakfast and, you know, get my son ready and do all of these things. But then there is a specific window that if after that time I attempt to go running, I won't enjoy it, I'll be pissed off, and I don't want to do it anymore. So I, you know, everything has to happen at a specific time. So between like 7:30 to 9 a.m., if we're really, really pushing it, like 9:30 a.m., those are the best times for me to like go for a run, because then that opens me up to be able to do, you know, other things as well. So sometimes I feel like reluctantly so, I have to go with the flow because I have a plan for the day and how I want things to run. Then my son can be like, oh, well, you know what? I'm going to have a nap at this time, girl, and you're just going to work around it. So it's tough. It's tough.
Obviously, we're recording this in the second lockdown, and, you know, this will be out in early 2021, but I really need to wrestle some routine back into my day. So I've been trying to do one of these sort of 30-day yoga challenges, and I've really noticed that if I don't do the yoga stuff as soon as I wake up or within the first couple of hours of waking up, and if I do it later on in the day, like once work is in my head or work is on my shoulders, I hate it. I'm kind of like, the last thing I want to do is be still or be at one with my thoughts and all the rest of it. It really upsets me, and I just want to kind of get back to like my computer or get back to Final Draft or whatever I'm working on.
Yeah, I'm the same. It's one of those things where when you have so many things going on as well, and you know that so much kind of relies on you, it's like, look, this is my time. This is my time to do me things. This is my time to not be a business person, a writer, a podcaster, or this or that. This is my time to just be Kelechi. So for that reason, I need it. Like, it's precious to me. Otherwise, nobody's getting Kelechi, because I'm not going to be able to write the, you know, the emails properly. I won't be able to podcast properly. Everything will just be a mess. So like, I need my time. And I think that that's important, because sometimes I do get that feeling of feeling a bit selfish. But then I actually look at the breakdown of the day and I think to myself, rah, I get all in all 1 hour to myself. Like, if you pick all the bits from where they are, it's 1 hour. So really, I deserve the hour.
I would say that like the majority of parenting is about giving yourself to the child, but you're one of those people who I see, you give so much of your time to other people. You know, even listening to your podcast, even listening to Say Your Mind, where, you know, there were episodes that you'd record that were, and it sort of, it felt to me like you were having an intimate conversation with me at 1 a.m. while looking after you, while nursing your kid and stuff. Like, you're very generous with your time. That to me then means that, like, the hour that you kind of get to yourself, where, you know, even if it's as frivolous as like, I'm gonna really take my time eating this piece of toast,
yes,
I'm gonna sit down and have a cup of tea in silence, and I don't want to talk to anyone, I don't want to give myself to anyone, you know, I will point myself in the direction of a screen, but I won't really be engaging. Like, I really, really understand that, because you know as well as like all the writing, like I do a lot of mentoring as well, and you just find that your days just kind of get you know your kind of life force gets taken with giving it to other people, and then you kind of have to then switch on being a parent in the evenings, and I sometimes find it really hard to be present with my kids.
Yeah, I've found that as well, trying to be present, because in my mind everything is racing. I don't have an assistant at the moment, so all the emails that come in for the pole dance studio, I'm answering those emails, and you know, you'll get all of the trivial stuff, and then you'll get all of the really detailed stuff that you have to pay attention to. And then you've got all of your just general, my general social commentary stuff, people wanting me to do this. And I guess with my following on social media, passing a specific mark, then you get the influencer stuff coming in and people wanting you to, you know, wanting to work with you on brand things, and trying to remain switched on enough to make the right decisions processing all of that in the background in my mind while still trying to like play with my son and make him food and really, you know, be present for his development as well. Am I doing the right things with him, you know, playing the right games, saying the right words, reading enough, learning enough to be able to benefit him? It feels, you know, honestly, at times it just feels really, really overwhelming. And that's why therapy is so important to me. Like, I have to have that, you know, those 50 minutes with my therapist where I can just say, you know what, I'm tired, or just talk about the most trivial thing, like, oh, I went to the supermarket and I couldn't find chicken wings, you know, like just have time where it's not about anybody else but me.
Can you ask you a question about that, about the social commentary stuff? Because I know, I guess, you know, when The Good Immigrant came out in 2016, 2017, I was so much more there and present in this, and you know, I see you online. I often feel like when stuff happens, people are almost like watching, waiting for you to comment. And it must be, I remember feeling so much pressure to have an opinion about stuff, or to have a quick opinion, or just my reactive opinion be researched and nuanced and complex and articulated well. And so, you know, sometimes I'd get stuff wrong, or sometimes I'd be like, I want to sit this one out. Mm-hmm. And then people would kind of go, well, you haven't spoken on this, and I'd be like, well, it's because, you know, Wednesday afternoons are when I look after my kid because nursery is expensive, and this is my time with my kid. Do you know what I mean? Do you ever feel like that?
Definitely, I feel the same way. And I think that's when I decided that, you know, even more so than before, I have to have these firm boundaries. So for instance, on Instagram at the moment, I'm just not posting in my stories. And, you know, people respect that enough now, but you see that there, some people still try to creep into your DMs and be like, I'm just checking if you're okay, because, you know, I saw something and I don't know if you saw it, but they try to be very, very careful about how they phrase things, but it's still transparent. Like, you're looking for me to come and have an opinion, a comment on something. And I've told people time and time again that, you know, I'm not your ranting angry black woman. If it bothers you so much, you've seen it, you go and, you know, say something about it. But it is, as you say, like, they want you to be the one to give them the nuance, the well-researched sort of approach, perspective on it. And also they want to check that their perspective on it is correct. And it's just like, I can't say that for you. I can't give you that. And so I've just not posted. And, you know, I've been using a new app that I came across, or that I was invited onto, that it's like audio based, and so it's like a live podcast, and there's various rooms that you can get involved
with.
So I've been kind of like listening in on various conversations, and then I'll kind of chime in where I can. But I'm noticing that even that now, I've got to pull back, because someone will be in a room and they'll tweet, why isn't Kelechi in this room? Because something's happening and she needs to come and say something. But, you know, whichever space I enter into, within a matter of time, it's like, oh, so you can be our voice, you come and say something. But it was meant to be for me initially, a way of having like my discreet headphones on, being able to listen while doing other things around the flat. But now, knowing that people are waiting for me to have an opinion, I've got to even pull back on that as well, and just make sure that all of my time isn't taken up trying to be everything to everybody else.
But also, like, you're an art, sorry to interrupt, but you're an artist, you're a writer, you're part of the job of writing and being a social commentator and all the rest of it is to listen and to and observe and take a step back and say it when you're ready to say it. And if people are waiting for you to say something in order to affirm what they believe, then they can't really be firm in what they believe, you know?
Exactly. And I think that there are a lot of people like that. They're not really sure what they believe, especially with everyone sort of like waxing lyrical about quote unquote cancel culture. They don't want to be the one to say something. They want you to kind of say it first, see the reaction that you get, and go, yeah, well, yeah, that's the one I agree with, or I don't agree with. I think people should be more brave.
Everyone wants to push back, but they want to push back after the prominent people have pushed back first.
And that's
why, like, in 2018, 2019, like, I just felt so much pressure around all of this stuff, and it was really messing with my head. And I kind of just had to go, you know what, you're a fiction writer, dude, Like, mm-hmm. you, the best way you extrapolate from this world is to kind of observe the world, create a fictional universe and interrogate it within the confines of that universe. You're not a social commentator. You're not, you know, and it was like I did this thing in Berlin that the Queen Bernadine Evaristo had curated, and she invited me to come to Berlin and talk on this thing. And this guy afterwards said, I'm writing a piece about public intellectuals. And I can you just give me a comment? I was like, I'm not a public intellectual. And he was like, and then he suddenly had his phone out recording. He was like, so is that your comment that you're not a public intellectual? I was like, no, firstly, I'm not a public intellectual. And secondly, I'm like, I don't want to do an interview. I don't know what this is about. And also, this is just isn't my space. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a fiction writer. But I think all of this stuff for me really, really speaks to this thing that I feel a lot, or this sort of guilt that I think I carry a lot, because I think a lot about how my parents were and how they weren't able to be present because they were just working at all hours of the day to kind of provide for us and all the rest of it. And I worry that social media for me, which I've now kind of assumed as part of my job, mm-hmm. Is pushing me into that similar space where I'm not being present with my kid. Do you have strategies for ensuring that, like, when you're on the floor playing the game in the imagined universe, you're not like, your eyes aren't straying to the other side of the room where your phone might be, or like feeling it, those phantom vibrations in your pocket that I sometimes feel? I've been watching Industry recently, this new BBC show, and like the sound folio that they have when in the scenes when they're in the bank, it's just like the constant vibrating phones, and it stresses me out so much.
I've got to watch that.
It's really good.
I have to put my phone in the bedroom. I just have to put my phone in the bedroom, and usually my phone's on silent, like, so I don't even have vibrate on. I just put it on silent and leave it there. Sometimes I just don't even notice how much time has passed without the phone. And I just noticed, like, my son might not necessarily want to do lots and lots of things. Like, he's happy sometimes just sitting next to me while I watch like some trash TV. Like, I love Real Housewives, the whole like Real Housewives franchise. So I might be watching Real Housewives of Potomac, and he's just there like, okay, well, girl, that's if that's what you want to do, like, okay. And then other times, you know, other times we're playing, or we'll go for a walk and go to the playground and things like that. Just I want to be away from the phone. And I just think that what the pandemic had kind of shown me so glaringly is that things can wait. And 100%. You know, before we were like, I've got to do it now, oh my god, and no, it's all right, things can wait.
I really understood this over the course of the pandemic. The more as artists we are in the world, the better the work becomes. If our work is constantly reacting to stuff that's online, and it's sort of snapshots between like, oh, I've got to get dinner ready, and my daughters often get frustrated with the little Lego pieces when they can't like separate them, and you know, I dropped this fire tweet like 20 minutes ago, what's the reactions like, has anyone come for me
yet?
yeah, all those kinds of things. Like, pandemic really, really showed me that actually that fire tweet doesn't matter. Just make the nice food, help with the fiddly Lego pieces, and you know, just be in the world, and actually like just be alone with your thoughts as well. Like going for walks and just like listening to music rather than listening to podcasts. So I'm not just like, I realized this thing where like I was just never allowing myself to sit with my thoughts. Like if I wasn't looking at my phone, I was listening to something. I was like imbibing information through podcasts or through audiobook or something, and like then like having conversations about it on group text or on like social media and stuff. And actually like none of that makes us good at what we do. What makes us good at what we do is just this, the ability to just sit with our thoughts, you know, or just to be in the world.
And for me, even in the like almost like the metaphysical sense as well, stillness allows for me to be able to channel things. I think that as artists, when we look at our ancestral lineage, there are stories that want to be told through us. There are rights that want to, or wrongs that want to be righted through us. And when we are so consumed with, you know, noise, it is noise, you know, no matter how much we enjoy the noise, it's still noise, and it kind of refracts the communication that comes through. So when I, you know, in my videos and stuff, I love being by the water now, and I never used to really think of myself as a water person, but being able to be still and be near the water, I've had some of my most kind of, I would say, profound thoughts being in that space after a run, you know, things feeling extremely clear to me. And it's because, like you say, I wasn't like taking in so much of what everybody else had to say. One of like my most, you know, fire tweets or my videos that came out, you know, during the pandemic, when I was talking about violence and stuff, and I made that by the river. I remember making it and then turning the thing on mute, turning notifications on mute. Like, I don't want to know, only for somebody to then retweet it later on. And I was like, right, it's got 1.4 million views and people are still talking about it. But I needed to distance myself from it because, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, I channeled something. The thing has been channeled by, you know, and get back to what I'm doing.
When it comes to your kid, I guess one of my primary concerns, aside from being present, is the stuff outside of our house, our place, is really messed up. And I want to prepare my kids for the world as it is. But I understand that there is a degree of cynicism, I feel, towards the world. You know, like when you've seen so as much fuckery as you've seen and nothing changes, and then people keep telling you that you've changed stuff, and actually then you're reminded that nothing has changed. Like, the cynicism starts to set in. And I don't want to prepare my kids for a world that they see as cynically as I do. I want them to prepare them for the world as it is. Do you ever think about stuff like that? Does that stuff ever kind of go into how you talk to your kid about stuff?
Yeah, and so that's why, I think like therapy is so important for me, because I save the bulk of my cynicism for my therapy sessions. That is when I can be like, you know what, I think the world is fucked. I don't know how we're going to make it through this. Like, what's happening right now? So I can come back and not kind of offload that onto my son or give him that energy. Because as somebody that felt like I didn't have a childhood, I do not want to take my son's childhood or his, you know, innocence, for want of a better term. I don't want to take that away from him. I want him to have that as long as possible. I will absorb the rest. I will absorb all of that energy that comes from the world for as long as possible, and explain things to him in a way that means that I take on the bulk of that, and I just explain things as simply as possible. And for me, the most simple way that I can explain it to him is that in this world, there are many people who are wounded and are hurting. That means that they do specific things from a place of wounding and hurting. You are not dealing with that. So try to understand their behavior as that. And just that basic rhetoric, or just that basic understanding, will help with so many things that they start to interact with without taking it on to themselves like, oh, this is about me. Because children are like that. They believe everything is about them as they're learning.
Yeah, definitely. I know I've told this story on the podcast before, but you haven't heard it, so I can't tell it to you. So my daughter goes to a very diverse school in a very multicultural area, and we're in Bristol, and the school is like right on the heart of traditionally where the African Caribbean community was in Bristol before gentrification came. And so she's been learning about the Bristol bus boycott recently. And she asked me what it was, one evening at bath time. She said, what was the Bristol bus boycott? And I was like, are you learning about it at school? And she said, yeah. And so I started telling her what I knew of it. And I told her about meeting Paul Stevenson, which was really, really amazing. And I realized I had to explain to her what racism was. And, you know, she's six, and, you know, we've had these conversations before, and I must send you a copy of the book if I haven't already. I realized I had to explain to her what racism was. And as I was explaining to her, I was also saying, you know, there are some people in this world who hate people who are a different skin color to them. And she, like, it just did not compute in her head. She was like, but that makes no sense to me. That is ridiculous. That is a stupid idea. And I was like, yeah, but the thing is, like, people might feel this way because, and then I stopped myself and I was like, no, I am now trying to justify why someone might be racist to my daughter, who this concept is just so fucking ridiculous to her that it just does not compute. So I would be intellectually dishonest in this moment if I tried to like justify the reason for it existing. And that was my cynicism kind of kicking in. I was like, actually, no, I need to have this conversation with you on your level. Yes. And I stopped and I was like, yes, you're right. It is ridiculous. It is a stupid idea. It exists, but it is a stupid idea, and we should always treat it like it's a stupid idea. And it was a really, really like powerful moment for me as a parent, just noticing where I can adjust how I talk to my kid about these things.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful, because it is talking to children at their level of understanding, and yet they understand so much, because I think that even that's why when I make my videos and I, yeah, so that's why I do Sally in HR and things like that, because to me, satire, being able to take the piss out of something so ridiculous, like the things that we see as people of color, like what we see happen to us and to other people like us, it's nothing short of ridiculous. So I agree with your daughter, like it's stupid, like this is stupid, and so I laugh at it as a way to take power away from it.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously your Sally and HR videos are amazing, and I need them on TV very soon. But I also really liked your video about the sickness that you did recently.
It's the sickness, doctor. It's the sickness.
It was so good. But you're right that, like, I mean, this is kind of how sort of right-wing comedians willfully misunderstand what satire is, because I think what you're doing is actually you're pricking holes in pervasive but inherently stupid and fucked up ideas, which to me is satire.
And that's the thing, for me it's not about going at a person, which they love to do. For me it's about going at the system, because it's the system that has gotten all of us to this point. So, you know, like my makeup tutorial video, using a medium that people love, it's very, very popular, like let's talk about makeup, but also let's use it to talk about the way that the government absolutely fucked us over during this pandemic. Like, let's do that then. And I didn't expect it to resonate the way that it did, but it did.
It still makes me laugh. It was so good. Do you ever think about, I mean, obviously, like, I don't know if, like, maybe in 5 years' time someone's just going to switch off the internet and we'll all just live in tents or something, I don't know. But do you ever think about your kid discovering your online presence in, like, decades' time and being able to sort of get a sense of who you are? Because this is a thing that I'm sort of fascinated by. And I got fascinated by this this year. Like, my mum died 10 years ago and got really obsessed with trying to understand who she was before she was my mother, because, you know, you just very, very quickly see that, you know, obviously, like, I'm a man saying this to a woman, but, like, you quickly see that, like, you know, once people have kids, like, you know, once women have kids, like, they become mother, you know, that, you know, and that becomes their identity, you know. And, you know, some people are really happy with that, and some people are like, well, it's, you know, it's part of me but not all of me and all the rest of it. And I really wanted to know who my mum was before she was my mum, who she was as a teenager. And so I texted her best friend when she was a teenager. I was like, tell me about my mum when she was a teenager, like, whose name had she written all over her exercise books, and what posters were on her wall, and, like, what was the thing that she used to sneak around doing, and all that kind of stuff. And I just gain this beautiful insight into my mum that I'd never had before. And it just made me think, like, if my kids ever wanted to know who I was before I was their parent, then they'd go online and they'd see the time I sent a lamb chop into space, and they'd see, like, little videos that I'd done, and, like, an archive of tweets where, like, you know, when I signed up for Twitter in 2009, I was you could definitely tell the energy was, please can I have a publishing deal. And now it's, you know, now the energy is, oh my God, do I have to talk about racism again? You know, like, and that's like the 11-year arc. But do you ever consider that your kid might discover your online presence and just have this real sense of who you were when you weren't on the floor with them playing games and reading and all the, watching Real Housewives together?
Yes, yeah. I think about that more and more now, and it makes me even more kind of deliberate and intentional in how I show up in my videos, because I want him to know that your mother was a bad bee. Like, I was out here, like, doing all of the things that I wanted to do, saying all of the things that I wanted to say. If today it's swinging around a pole, then that's what I'm doing. And if it's tomorrow we're talking about you know, the inherent racism of white liberalism, then that's what we're going to do as well. But it's about having that full spectrum of everything, like you say, like, you know, we have children and suddenly you are parent, like, you are mother, this is it. And then the myth of mother becomes attached to you, and it's something that I'm, like, tearing off fervently, because I don't want it attached to me. I am me, and like you say, mother is part of what I do and it's part of my identity, but not all of my identity. And it's making myself see that before anybody else, because so many people are focused on, oh, I don't want people to push this on me, but it's also what I've been pushing on myself from what I've learned from growing up and stuff. So I want him to be able to look and see the many facets that make me in the public eye, but also kind of marry that with what he knows of me privately.
But I wonder if that that is really helpful in helping to foster like a healthier respect between parent and child, because if your child views you as like solely theirs, and I remember reading this thing about this idea of the good enough mother, and how, like, you know, that a mother who can withstand a child's intense love and a child's intense hatred is deemed like the good enough mother. And I was thinking about that in relationship to, like, I guess my own relationship with my mum. And, you know, obviously this is stuff that's never put on me as a dad. Like, I'm never walking around being like, oh, there goes writer and father Nikesh, you know. Do you know what I mean? But, like, and it's a thing that, like, you know, is pointed out all the time. Like, you know, every time a woman who is a mother is interviewed about their work, about their artistic work or their creative work, they're always also asked about how parenthood has affected their work, and no one asks me. And, like, in weird way, it's really affected how I view my work. But and I'd love to talk about it, but also, like, it's kind of an inane question at the same time, you know.
But it is interesting how that happens. And I, you know, I look at it before having my son, I would see people's, you know, social media bios, and it would say like mother, wife, and then this fucking amazing thing, you know, alongside what they've done. But it was just like, that doesn't come first. Like, this is what comes first. And since having my son, I get it. But at the same time, I'm still like, no, because this is what comes first. Me being a baby girl is what comes first. And then everything else follows from then. Yeah, and it's just interesting how those conversations happen. And maybe because, you know, my son at this point is 15 months old, so people will keep asking me, because it is a big shift in dynamic to how I was working before in my life. Very, like, selfishly, you know, I do things when I want to do things in my day. Suddenly I have to take an, you know, an entire human being into consideration, who's of close proximity to me. It does change a lot, but I'm hoping that it isn't always the focus of everything that I do.
15 months is such an interesting age as well, because that's when that's where they want independence but can't bear the independence, yeah, at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. He wants to just be strolling down the street and you're like, well, you're going to get tired in a few steps, so let's just rein this in. But yeah, it's great, and it's humbled me in different ways, just to see this being, to see this little person, just to see them and not have all of the baggage that I have. And I think to myself, why do I have to have the baggage? Do I need to have the baggage? Who cares? You know, it's making me kind of take myself and disconnect from things that I don't need to have. You know, like the shitty friendships that you maybe just hold on to because you're just like, oh, well, I've known them for so long and blah, 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 blah. Now I kind of go, well, no, I don't have to have them. I don't have to have a lot of these things. So I'm feeling freer in certain ways, but still very much like hyper focused on things that I think need to change around us, because now it feels more urgent, I guess.
Where does your creative spark come from? Like, what drives the creativity in you?
I would say my spirituality. The more focused I've been on spirituality, the more that it's opened me up. And we're not talking about spirituality, I feel like, in a whitewash mainstream corporate sense. I'm talking about, you know, my indigenous spirituality that comes from, you know, specifically my mother's side. So looking more into Yoruba cosmology and learning about those things, and having a very visceral understanding that there is more to what makes me than what can be seen by others, you know. And so I just put that into my work. Like, I wrote a short story that's coming out March 2021 as part of Sarita Domingo's anthology of love stories by women of color.
I cannot wait for this, but Sarita is amazing, and that lineup is ridiculous. Like,
amazing.
I cannot wait to read Varidzo's work. Like, obviously, like, I mentored mm-hmm. her when she was really young, and then she was in The Good Immigrant and stuff. And like, I love her work, and like, you and Kachenga and mm-hmm. Amna, like, what a lineup. Cannot wait for that. In fact, I'm gonna post this episode around the time of the release of that.
That'll be amazing.
And I'll do like a little plug at the end and for it. Sorry, yeah, I interrupted
We need it. We need it. And being asked by Sarita to write something, I appreciated another woman, another black woman, seeing me and thinking, not just thinking about me through the lens of, you know, social commentator, podcaster. She's looked at my things and gone, she can write, so why doesn't she come and write fiction. And I wanted to publish fiction before nonfiction. But when I was suggesting this and, you know, talking to agents and things like that, they were like, oh, yeah, but, you know, you've got such a voice. You should do something with nonfiction. And lo and behold, I've still put that to the side. And the first thing I ended up really doing is the fiction thing. And to be able to write that, I was able to put my knowledge about the transatlantic slave trade and colonization, I was able to put that into a love story, into a romance story, but also have the kind of esoteric idea of like traveling through time and love transcending time, regardless of, you know, all the things that happen. To be able to put all of that into a short story, even I read it back and I said, nah, you're a G, and this is what you should be doing. And, you know, it was great to go through that process. But looking at that, I bring that up because that short story for me shows where my creativity and that spark comes from, is the fact that being able to tap into something that goes far deeper than what we can see.
Yeah, and you raised a really slightly tangential interesting point, because I as I was saying before, when I was sort of going, I just want to write fiction, like none of us go into the creative industries or the creative arts going, I want to be a social commentator,
you
know?
No,
like we just want to tell stories. And that, you know, that's what's been so magical about Sarita's anthology and Bolu Babaloda's short story collection,
yes,
Love and Colour. Like people writing joy and people writing about love and people writing about magic, it's so beautiful to see that happening. I remember my friend Musa Okwonga said this really beautiful thing that I still think about daily, and it really upset me when he said it, because I realised that was the treadmill that I was on. He said, why must the oppressed always be called upon to comment on their oppressors? Ask the oppressors to hold themselves hold each other more accountable. And I think about that all the time. You know, imagine what work we could create if we weren't, you know, having to do social commentary. Imagine what space I would have. And, you know, while I am interested in writing about racism and about trying to understand it and, you know, try to tell stories that humanize the people who are the victims of it, and, you know, I've done that for teenagers and stuff, I realized that after two books for teenagers that were about really hard, gritty social issues, my third one is going to be about joy. It's going to be about, you know, I've just signed a book deal for it. It's going to be about a stand-up comedian just trying to find her voice, because that's the thing that we should be writing. And that's what makes me so excited that you are like, no, I'm going to write fiction for a bit. Are you working on any longer pieces now that you've kind of had the amazing experience of working with Sarita in that anthology?
I want to do a collection of short stories, because after the reaction that I had and the feedback that I had from people actually reading the one that I wrote for Sarita's anthology called The Watchers, my story, I thought to myself, well, this is what I want to do. I just want to give you snippets into different worlds, but actually the worlds interconnect, but just these little snippets, like a collection of, I don't know, five or so stories that allow for us to have that. Like, I'm very, very inspired by Octavia Butler and how Octavia Butler managed to do that, and I still very much want my role in Wild Seed. So Viola Davis, please, I'm begging you.
We have put it out into the universe. Yes, universe, go, yes, and make it happen.
Make it happen, please, Viola. Yeah, to me, that's, if there's any book that's quintessentially my style, it's Wild Seed. Like, it has everything that I enjoy about the world in that, and I want to create more of that type of thing that Octavia Butler created. So yeah, I just want to write more. I just want to show where my mind is, because like you say, social commentary all the time, to me, it's unimaginative. It's a bit boring. So that's why, you know, when news channels and, you know, various news outlets will ask me to comment now, I don't want to say anything. So they've moved on to other people, because I want space to actually be more creative. What, you want me to explain for the 50th time why this statement is racist? Really? You don't know by now? It's boring.
And you quickly realise that you're doing them a favour rather than doing yourself a favour by agreeing to be on that treadmill. Like, I did it once and I realised that I am not someone who likes being on TV. I don't like it when the camera's on me. I like sitting by myself and writing and reading, you know, like I'm quite boring in that way. I'm just conscious of time, because obviously we need to get you to your next thing. In theory, simple questions, but they might open a can of worms in that classic way that you kind of like you break something open in the last 5 minutes of. I always break something open in the last 5 minutes of my therapy session, and then my therapist's like, "Our time's up," and I'm like, "But I'm just
no, I'm giving you all of me."
Yeah. One of the questions I'm asking everyone, and you kind of articulated it before, but I'd love to kind of come back to it. Given how fucked the world is, what are your strategies for raising your kid to be filled with joy and boundlessness and ambition and love and all the rest of it, but at the same time be prepared for the world outside your door?
My strategy is just sticking to my rituals, sticking very much to my rituals, because I would, to me personally, in my opinion, what we are facing in society, for the fact that it's been able to survive for this long, this oppressive dynamic, this oppressive energy that's been able to control and ruin so many things and people for so long, centuries, right? That's not something we simply see of the eye. That is also a spiritual entity in and of itself. So to merely try to meet that spiritual entity and energy with intellect is futile. So it's important to also have your spiritual rituals and things that you do to keep yourself grounded and to keep yourself in the world, but not of the world. So I very much have like my morning rituals, and my son sees me do them. Like I'll find stillness, I'll pray. I have cleansing rituals that I do around the flat, cleansing rituals that I do for myself. Then I do a prayer for him daily. Like daily I speak power and positivity into his life, protection over his life. So he's watching me going, what the hell is this woman doing? But it's important for me to get him used to armoring himself spiritually before entering into the day, before entering into the outside world, because that will let him be more conscious of, you know, energy and be more spiritually grounded. To me, at this stage, that is all that I need to provide, because I can handle the rest. For now, he just needs to learn spiritual hygiene. That's important, because this world is so gunky with this energy. And that's really what affects us. Not just the physical things that we see. Oh, they didn't employ me. They didn't do this. They didn't do that. It's the spiritual gunk that we're carrying that we don't even realize. That is what we need to kind of get rid of ourselves and for our children.
I love that. I've asked this of all of my guests, and everyone has told me something different. And I think yours has been probably the thing that I do the least, and actually the thing that I will take out of this the most, because, you know, everyone else has sort of said variations on things that I'm like, yeah, I've already thought that, but I've never thought that before. That's really lovely. Thank you. I was going to do that thing of like, with 5 minutes to go, break something open. I've been thinking a lot about spirituality recently, basically. How I used to be and where I am now. Kelechi Okafor, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been a real
thank
pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Nikesh. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Kelechi Okafor for talking to us, especially when her kid was on a nap. It's always like when the kid's on a nap and you need to do something that it becomes the danger nap. So thank you so much for taking time out. And thank you to you for joining us. Please subscribe. Please leave us a review. If it's a good review, I mean, if it's a bad review, like, why fill the internet with hate? You know, just keep it yourself. I know I'm not perfect. I'm trying my best here. Tell your friends, review us, leave us a message on social media. Buy Who's Loving You, buy Brown Baby. Thank you to Acast. Thank you to Bluebird. Thank you to you for listening. And we'll be back next week with another episode. But in the meantime, please, you know, this is a free podcast. And I would just really love it if you took the time to buy my memoir. Thank you so much. See you next week. Goodbye.
Brown baby, I am brown baby. Yes, I am. I am silly brown baby.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.